Thank you, Florence.
I would like to acknowledge my colleague, Phil Greiner, who has put me up here to speak today. We have no disclosures. And I'm going to talk to you today about an international academic community partnership. I, too, wonder how exactly we came to be in this session. We'll take a vote on that afterwards, because what I hope to do is actually kind of give you the nuts and bolts of how it is that we established a successful international academic community partnership. Our colleagues at Universidad Centroamericana, particularly our social work colleagues, Fairfield University has provided financial support to get this thing up and running, the School of Nursing, University College, and the Center for Faith and Public Life. And lastly, two people in our community, Marisol Moraes and Eunor Garcia, who have been instrumental in this partnership. Okay, and I have lots of pictures. All right. Lots of times when you talk about academic community partnerships, there is an academic unit and there is an organization in the community with whom the academic unit works. We actually don't have an organization in the community. We have a community, a group of people, some of whom are on this slide. We are not looking to expand services or provide services. We are working with the community for them to identify needs and come up with solutions together that they can implement. And our academic partnership is actually two universities, the University of Central America, or UCA, and Fairfield. All right. Our partnership is really steeped in a relationship that begins at an institutional level. UCA is located in Managua. Fairfield University is located in Fairfield, Connecticut. They are both Jesuit universities. And about 10 years ago, UCA contacted Fairfield and said, we'd like to establish an institutional partnership for study abroad as well as service learning opportunities for our students. And several departments from Fairfield University traveled to Managua, including, actually, Phil from the School of Nursing. And the first visit in 2004 from a School of Nursing perspective did not go very smoothly because UCA has no School of Nursing. And the only model that they had was a one-semester immersion experience for our students, which doesn't really fit with the nursing curriculum. There was a social work professor, Professor Alvarez, who had some interest, but that interest was not supported by the administration. So several years passed. Other departments at the university, at Fairfield University, developed short-term immersion experiences. And in 2008, administration changed at UCA. And at that point, the study abroad office at Fairfield invited the School of Nursing to put in a proposal, which we did, which quickly jetted us to Managua. And we had our first face-to-face visit with the School of Social Work. And we agreed that we wanted our students to have an interactive experience and to work on a long-term project together. And really, our first visit focused on things like the logistics. What's the time frame? Who's going to do what? How are we going to arrange things? And we set up an informal mechanism for our students to communicate via email, which sounds really simple. We thought it would be. And the difficulty to establish that small thing, to actually get the email addresses exchanged and get the students to communicate one with another, should have been a clue for us about how some things that you think are going to be really simple take a lot more effort than you might expect. UCA selected for us a community in which we could work in Managua. And they selected that community because it was, as they said, poor enough and safe enough for students to work. As part of their coursework, the social work students go into the community to learn about poverty. God bless you. All of the social work students are adult learners. They have full-time jobs. They all do all their classwork on Saturdays. So their time spent in the community with us, from the faculty's perspective, was a bonus. From the students' perspective, it meant they had to take a day off from work. So we had a lot of assumptions and a lot of challenges, really, to overcome. To the social work students' credit, they get no academic credit for this, but they couldn't wait to work with us. Okay. It was very clear to us, though, at that meeting that if we were going to work in Managua, we were going to work in this community. Okay. The community is the best part, and I couldn't resist these photos. The social work professor at UCA introduced us to the community of Ayapal. It's about 450 families on the western border of Managua. And our primary contact was with the woman in the center in the yellow shirt. Her name is Marisol, and the young man directly below her, Auner, who works with her. He's also a college student. And she has a preschool. It's one of three schools in Ayapal, where she also provides a lot of adult education and after-school enrichment activities, all of which she does with, I should point out, no money. And she's very focused on the health of the community. She is not an official, she has no official leadership role in the community, but she clearly is a community leader. And her school is kind of a community gathering place. At our first meeting, she was very reluctant to work with us. She's had a number of experiences where people from other countries, including the United States, came in with kind of grandiose plans of how they were going to help out, and they helped out for, I don't know, till their interest ran out or their money ran out or something ran out, and then they disappeared. So she was able to verbalize that with us. She was very clear that any collaboration represented enormous investment on her part and her community members' part in terms of time and also hopefulness. And she did not want people to be disappointed. So we agreed that the first step would be we would come with our students and we would get to know each other. And that was our goal, which fit in just fine in terms of public health, in terms of doing a community assessment. We just used different words to do the same thing. It was also somewhat reassuring to us that she wasn't looking for us to be the answer to all of her problems and all of the concerns. So, we had, before we ever left the country, the institutional support from Fairfield University as well as the University of Central America. Our study abroad office handles every detail of our trips. Faculty does nothing. We sort of order it like McDonald's. We'd like to go these days, and they arrange everything. Collect the money, everything. On the UCA side, there's a comparable department which handles all of our arrangements once we're there. So we have a student who's sick, we get medical care. We want to have a pizza party in the community, they help us order the pizza. So institutional support is enormous and very helpful. It gives us entree into a community. It allows for student-to-student interaction, interdisciplinary and international. It also allows for faculty-to-faculty interaction. And most important, I think, is the institutional infrastructure creates sustainability. The two universities have three-year contracts that are renewed, that they re-up their commitment to the ongoing efforts. So this project is not dependent on my presence at Fairfield University or my interest. It's an institutional arrangement. I'm going to skip this. We do a lot of student prep. When I ask our students if they've been to Central America or Latin American countries, they say, yes, Mexico, and I say, where? And they say, Cancun. And that's not exactly where we're going. So we do have a series of workshops that are required, and they are in addition to coursework that the students are required to do. The actual experience is integrated into the public health nursing course and counts for clinical. All right, so we did a lot of planning, a lot of upfront stuff for about 9 months before we actually arrived in Managua with our first group of nine students. And remember, our goal is to get to know each other, so we began with the sort of standard public health nursing windshield survey, except that we were not driving, we were walking. Everyone agreed that the focus of our visit was health, and Marisol was very good at recognizing that she could speak for herself and not the other members of her community, so she made it possible for us to do a lot of interviews with community residents. She identified for us a particular part of the community which was at risk. This puddle that you see during the dry season is empty, and during the rainy season it fills up, and it fills up really, really, really fast, like, you know, one rainstorm and it rises a foot. It's quite dramatic, and it floods. And it floods a certain neighborhood of homes that are not actually legal house lots. People have just built their houses there. So if they leave their houses, there's a risk that someone will come and take the physical structure of their house or come and occupy their house, and they will have no legal standing. So when it floods, they stay in their homes. It's been like that for about 10 years. We began interviewing houses in that area. It's called the DK area. And we interviewed in teams. That's in that photograph, three Fairfield U students and one UCA social work student. What you don't see there is our English students from UCA who serve as translators. 5 minutes, okay, I'm sorry. We did open-ended interviews. What works in your community? What needs to be improved? What are the health concerns of your family members? And what is the health history of your family members? And everyone, as you can see, took copious notes. Our English translator students were valuable members of our team. They actually were key informants as well. We had focus groups that Marisol set up with us, with teachers from her school, parents from the community, women who participated in the health programs. And again, we asked the same kinds of questions and got as much data as we could collect. And then we, in our post-conferences, this is very high-tech. Very high-tech. Well, it's very fragile. Our assets that we identified and concerns from the interviews, as well as what we saw and what we observed. And we collected all these responses. We sort of organized it, took it back to the community, and presented it and said, what would you like to work on? And although it does not appear on this board, they chose HIV/AIDS and misconceptions and misunderstanding about HIV/AIDS, and the format for their intervention was a DVD that they wanted. So we said, okay, you're the boss. You know your community. We'll work on HIV/AIDS. This is just a slide, I'm gonna skip this. It talks about how we expand the involvement of students beyond the students who go to Nicaragua. You can read that. The actual creation of the intervention, the HIV DVD, was quite a project. We debated for about 3 seconds getting a Spanish language DVD from NIH or CDC or wherever, and decided not to do that. So we used a digital storytelling software. We used images from Nicaragua. We had UCA students do the translation. We created the storyboard. We went back and forth between Managua and Fairfield. Lots of reviewing. Was it what the community, did it reflect adequately what the community believed the misconceptions were? They chose the music and we put it all together. We were able to make 2 trips from Fairfield to Nicaragua without students during the production of this DVD. And it was on our second visit right before we left, or about, I guess, 3 weeks before we were to go back, when with our DVDs, when Marisol explained that she didn't actually want 3 or 4 DVDs to use as group presentation, she wanted one for every family. There were 450 families. So we ratcheted that up and got 450 DVDs. She was also, as we were, concerned about the effectiveness of the intervention and agreed to a pre- and post-test model. We put that through IRB at Fairfield. There is no IRB at UCA. And we took a group of students in the spring, did our survey of attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors on HIV/AIDS. dispersed DVDs to all the people who participated in the survey and returned 3 months later and re-administered the survey. And next year we will present the results of the intervention, because that's not the purpose of this conversation. We expanded our student involvement in the summer. Oh, I wanted to say one thing. In the spring and the summer, our involvement with the social work students changed dramatically. We had an entire class of social work students. They were the same group, both visits, and we added an orientation to our program so that they were more up to speed on what we were doing. And they really became an integral part of our team, and that you could see an enormous difference between the first and the second visit in terms of their investment in the project. Their professor is not really interested in the data, other than to show them, to use it to teach them demographics. They, however, are very interested in the data, and some of them would like to use it for their final, like their capstone projects. So that's a really interesting thing, unanticipated benefit that came out of it. We are expanding student involvement to involve graduate students. We were able to get a grant to have a faculty member come with us in the summertime to check that out as a possible clinical site. So when we return next summer, we will be having graduate students go with us. And the social work and the nursing students collaborated this past summer to come up with the plan for our next visit. And so all of the activities that we will be doing have been planned by the students. My time is really up. It's a good thing. I'm going to do lessons learned in 3 seconds, okay? We were surprised to find that the faculty at UCA is uninterested in publishing, other than a newsletter article, perhaps for the newspaper. We were very worried about how we would share data and how we would work together, collaborate on publications. It is not on their agenda. In terms of faculty time on this side, this is very labor intensive. Taking the students there is not really hard and doesn't take much effort, but making the rest of it happen in between times is very labor intensive and not factored into my workload. The stability of having the same group of students, social work students, go semester after semester is incredibly important. And we, this summer, surveyed them about their perceptions of the experience, and the overwhelming theme was we want to be more involved, not less. In terms of the community, they continue to work with us. We stipend our community workers at a rate that is comparable to what the university translator students are stipended. And we continue to seek ways to involve them in the project once we have gone, in ways that could provide them with some financial support. Last picture of cute children and my contact information. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Right, I'll repeat the question because this is getting recorded. The question is that I'm from a faith-based university, and my colleague Faye Hummel is from a Colorado State institution. would there be any difference in the students in those two settings? And I have to say that I took the data that we collected and went to someone in my university to get statistical help, and she looked at it right away, didn't even hardly hit a button on her computer and said, this data didn't come from this place, did it? I mean, she could tell just in the range and the variance in the data that they weren't SPU students, because we have a very homogeneous group. That's a really good question, because I haven't surveyed our students in this regard, so I just have anecdotal experience that I think we have a equally good mix. I think we have students who are very open, who understand power and privilege in the world, who understand discrimination and racism, and understand that no matter who you are, you're part of that system if you live here in the United States. And then other students don't want to hear that at all. I was listening to Sister Rosemary Donnelly this morning, and we were talking about the foundation of social justice, and that it came out of the church. And So we as professors talk that in class, and our students come to SPU because it is a faith-based institution, and we still have a hard time selling that argument. I know that sounds amazing, but true. So I would say, yes, we have a very particular culture as a faith-based university, but our students are not homogeneous in that regard, but still more homogeneous than at a state university.
We weren't forced into it. So the question is, have we investigated collaboration with sort of an official health organization within Nicaragua?
Yes.
Okay. There is a clinic, state-run clinic, based in the community, and we have had conversations with the physician and nurse who are assigned there. They're assigned on a rotating basis, so the pair who was there when we started is no longer there, and there's a new set. The last time we were there, the clinic was never open the days we were there.
Oh. Like,
well,
like, does Aloha Missions go there, or you know, I'm just trying to think. Like, I know I just met someone because we're involved with the Philippines, mm-hmm. and they were trying to connect us with Aloha Missions too. So there may be some missionary group that's going there, and they want students to link up with you guys because they can use the help. And it may be they want nursing students. It may be they want social work. It's just finding that right group of people that go to Nicaragua.
Can you talk about something different?
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Official government structure, which is called the Ministry of Health, and they're the ones who set standards. They're the ones
right.
who set policy. They're the ones who determine all educational content. So that's
what that is.
Right.
That's what you're talking about.
Right. The short answer is we have not at this point done that, but we are at the point where if we want to move forward, we will need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we just have gotten introduced to the local government official on our last trip. And so he was busy hosting Cuban doctors, but on our next visit, we will be meeting with him.
Right, and the question was, would study abroad experiences or study in-place experiences, too. We don't need to go internationally to have those cross-cultural experiences. Would those heighten the sensitivity of students to their place in the world and who they are? And I say absolutely. I think as a caveat, though, an international learning experience without the preparation and support and the context for that experience becomes tourism. And in tourism, there's no change of mind. There's, I have the answer and I'm here to help you. And then I go home to my environment, and the people that the students have interfaced with stay in their environment and no one is changed.
The question is, how do students pay to do this? And I think it's a problem because it's expensive. It's about $1,400, including airfare. I wrote a grant, was able to get some funding to scholarship a student. So our Sigma Theta Tau organization scholarships a student. Students have the capacity, if they choose, to make this a fundraising activity of the Student Nurses Association. They have yet to do so, but they talk about it each time. And they self-select, and part of the self-selection has to do with the size of their parents' wallets, mm-hmm. to be perfectly blunt. That's really inspiring. I wish that we could do that. Oh, the comment was that classes of alumni have
That's
been specifically targeted mm-hmm. and asked to support this. There is another school that we met in Georgia, I believe, that charges a $25 student activity fee to every student. And we were at a Latin American Studies conference where her dilemma was, I don't have enough students to study abroad. I could support many more than want to go. It was a dilemma I've never heard of.
Yeah, I have a question for Dr. Sternos and Lillian. You know, I'm thinking, actually, you have very interesting study, but I'm thinking because your sample size is only, you only have 100 students, then you're using the regression analysis. So I'm thinking maybe, you know, because you only have one significant. You don't have other variable, you didn't get a significant. But I'm thinking maybe it's the power issue. You know, because your sample size is too small. And actually the 100 students and you also divide by the grade, right?
Right, yes. Right?
So that means, you know, each group we only have like 20 or 30 student in one group. So that's why I'm thinking, so you don't get a lot of significance. That means that they are not significant because you don't have enough power to detect that. Okay, and I have that's my question. Okay. I have a question about Dr. Tennis. I think it's very interesting because we met last year at Singapore. They present their pilot study of this study. I was the moderator of that session, so I think it's very interesting. So I'm very excited to see, you know, their follow up the study. My question is, I think for your this table, the table she gave us, you know, like for I'm wondering like what's your scoring system for each. Like from 1 to 5 or 1 to 3 for each item, because when you look at it, you know, the scale, the subscale, talk to parents and use of drugs and alcohol, you know, because when we say the negative scale is from like 1 to 3 or 1 to 5, so it's impossible. You can get a mean is less than 1.
Right. You see what I'm saying? If there are only in some cases it was yes no items, so there were. Either you said yes or you said no, so nominal. And then other cases, they were ranked from 0 to 4 or 0 to 3. So they didn't have the same, you know, and the statistician worked out I didn't do the analysis, the statistician did that based on the different groupings. So you've got some of them nominal, either you're yes or no, and you have others that are ranked from 0 up to, so that explains that.
Okay, then I think that makes sense to me. But I'm thinking there's produce another problem. Because you say you're doing the federal analysis, because I did the instrument development in my study. Then, you know, when you do the federal analysis, like the each scale, some scale is ranged from 1 to 5. And one scale is ranging from yes or no, 0, 1, and 1 to 5. You know, this is like the compare orange and apple. You know, when they have different scoring system, so you won't be able to put them together to run the federal analysis and to group them together.
I'll talk with her about that, but she, I mean, and you know, how she did that, because we did have different, not every item was the same, you know, and mm-hmm. she did what she, you know, no one else has factor analyzed the instrument, you really, but it's interesting how the items did fall out, and they all seem to, you know.
But
I hear what you're saying.
Why you have a different scoring system?
We didn't create this instrument. What happened was the government, the federal government, created this instrument.
Okay.
And every organization running an abstinence education program got the same tool. And we all had to use that instrument. So we couldn't change anything.
Yes.
This is what we ended up with. We're stuck with how they decided to do it.
Ouch.
Yeah. So this is what we, you know, so it's like we didn't create that. Because I understand your point from a statistical perspective.
So that's why maybe you cannot, so that's why it's not appropriate to use a factor analysis. Just use the scale the government they use. Maybe they already established the reliability and validity on that scale.
Well, actually, they didn't.
They didn't.
And that's why they didn't. And that's why we had some, so here we are. But at the same time, we were limited in the kind of analysis we could do. So we decided, let's wait until we got the, you know, we had a larger band. Let's see what we could do with some of this. Because we can do some other finer analyses with it, especially when we're looking at grades. We're doing some stuff now, 6, 7, 8. So, yeah, there are flaws. It's not a perfect, but this is what we inherited. You know what I mean? And we didn't. Yeah, actually, we can talk. but Wendy Ann had some different challenges. You know, she had some different challenges with that. So, it's not a perfect world.
Any other questions?
But But that's very good points, actually, very good points.
Well, let's give our panelists round of applause.